Can education be fun, safe, incorporate the natural environment, and still be affordable? Actually affordable for anyone, even low-income families? We will learn today that yes, it can. Affordable preschool education, learning in outdoor classrooms. That's our focus in this hour of an organic conversation, your show on everything that makes life worth living. I'm Helge Hellberg. From my limited German perspective, the educational system here in the US is a curious one. I come from a country where all education is free, all schools, preschools, and even college. Maybe there's a $400 sign-up fee for some universities, but in Germany, as in most of Europe, school and education is free and accessible to anyone, really anyone. Clearly not so here in the US, but maybe that is slowly but surely changing. We stumbled across an idea that now has taken beautiful shape and is proving itself as a great model: affordable preschool education, learning in outdoor classrooms. Making, in this case, preschool education fun, safe, and affordable, even for low-income families, as we will learn. That's our focus in this hour of an organic conversation. This show is brought to you by Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Become a nutrition consultant or a natural chef at one of their campuses, or learn from home in a self-paced mentored distance learning program. For more information on a degree in holistic nutrition or culinary arts, bowmancollege.org. And Fry Vineyards, America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Award-winning wines at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com. Our topic in this hour is affordable preschool education, learning in outdoor classrooms. All that and more in just a minute, right after the break. Stay tuned. And we're back here to an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. Our topic in this hour is affordable preschool education, learning in outdoor classrooms. There's a model in Seattle, Washington that we have stumbled across, an idea that has now taken beautiful shape and is proving itself as a great model, perhaps for many other regions as well. We are speaking with the CEO of the Tiny Trees Preschool, who's joining us today from Seattle, Washington. That's Andrew J. Andrew, are you there?
Yes. So excited to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yes. Wonderful for you to make time. I know your particular branch, your school, is a fairly new one. I believe you're just celebrating the first months of existence. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, so we opened on September 12th of this year, and we have four different locations and parks in Seattle. We have 160 children that now attend classes daily. And a little over half of those children receive financial assistance from Tiny Trees or free tuition through the Seattle Preschool Program, which is a pretty amazing initiative that the city of Seattle is doing to bring universal preschool to our region.
Wonderful. And we want to talk about that financial model in just a minute. But let's frame the challenge that you are able to solve. I'm from Germany. And as it is the fact in many other countries around the world and all of the countries in Europe, all education is free, from preschool to high school to college. obviously not so here in the U.S. And when I did the research on your website, you have an interesting model that I was not aware of. Can you describe what the situation here is for a family? How much money does it take, even before regular school, for a family to take on in financial burden or even in debt to get a kid ready for school?
So when we were looking at Tiny Trees, when I was just thinking about outdoor preschool, it was the ability to cut the cost of operating a preschool and make it more affordable for families that really drew me to the concept of sort of four schools, outdoor preschools. And, you know, in Seattle, we did a survey looking at a number of preschools for full-day programs, and we found that families are paying at a minimum $1,200 and at a maximum up to $3,000 a month for preschool. And so to put that in perspective, you know, that means a family is paying about $16,000 to $20,000 a year for early childhood education, which, you know, for preschoolers can be 3 years of your life. I mean, our child could be entering kindergarten and have close to $60,000 in student loans or education debt before they began their public school career, you know, at the age of 5 years old. And we have a very strong commitment to public education in K through 12 in the United States, but we have just the beginnings of public support for early learning in really the 0 through 5 age range. And so it's a lot of financial anxiety for parents to think, can I afford to make sure my child has all of those emotional and social skills, those pre-academic skills, and that they're ready when they enter, you know, enter kindergarten. We know the kids that, you know, have a preschool experience are more likely at third grade to be able to read, to be able to do math and science at grade level, and to have the emotional and social health to build positive relationships, you know, build to make enduring friendships, and to be able to adapt to, you know, a quickly changing education system.
Yeah, what's the picture with that? So $60,000 could be the debt already before a child goes into the regular school system. One out of three kids does not graduate from high school. Can you give us an understanding of what that means for our society? What are the consequences for their lives and for the communities of kids not graduating from high school?
So we know that 60% of children in Washington State do not receive a preschool education, and they enter kindergarten 2 years behind their peers. And for many of those children, that continues to high school, where that third of high school, of those third of children in the state will get to the end of their high school years and will not graduate. They'll drop out. Mm-hmm. They fall into the criminal justice system. And the consequence that you have is you have a homelessness epidemic in Washington State. You have more young people entering into criminal justice and into jail and not being productive. And then you have more folks that are stagnating. You know, we don't have the luxury of jobs that you can do that don't require a college degree or some level of post high school education. And so, you know, by not graduating high school, those young people go from being a productive, helpful, you know, part of society to requiring a lot of public support. And so, from, you know, the analysis that, you know, from a lot of the analysis that the Federal Reserve has done and economists, they found that the investment in early learning has a big multiplier effect for society in the long term. That if you're able to make sure that a young person is equipped to succeed when they enter school, they're more likely to then be a productive, happy, and citizen when they graduate from high school. And so that's sort of the big question of the country, is like, how can we help more families afford preschool? How can we lower that cost? And how can we support this emerging movement in Washington State towards universal preschool, towards more public funding for our littlest learners?
It's interesting when you say that. Of course, a beneficial part of society or a contributing part of society, the alternative of that is not neutrality. It's not that they are not a contributing part of society. Mm-hmm. They're actually costing society resources and money. So it's really, it switches from being beneficial to you know, taking resources out of the system, right? If a child has no education and ends up in the criminal justice system, all of a sudden it's a problem from a benefactor to society to having now become a problem. You either have a positive impact or you have a negative impact on society. That's what you're saying.
Yeah. Right?
Those are the two choices.
Yep. And it becomes much harder to intervene and to make a difference
in that
adult person's life than
sure.
it is to use a smaller amount of money and intervene and make an impact in a young person's life when their brain is just starting to form and they're just starting to gain the skills they need.
Yes. You're listening to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg, and our topic in this hour is affordable preschool education. Learning in outdoor classrooms. On the phone with me is Andrew Jay. He's the CEO of Tiny Trees Preschool, a great new model that's happening in Seattle, Washington. Andrew, let's talk about that. How was the idea of Tiny Trees Preschool born? What is it exactly, and how do you make it affordable?
2 years ago, I was hanging out with a number of friends, and I'm currently in mid-30s, and quite a few folks in my social group have started to have children and encountered the sort of surprising reality of how expensive preschool and childcare is. You know, in Seattle, there's really long wait lists, so you're really lucky to get into your sort of top choice of a school or a program. Mm-hmm. And then if you do get in, it's just really expensive. And so as a nonprofit person, I've spent a lot of time in outdoor education, working with middle school and high school youth. I started to dig into why is running a preschool so expensive. And what I found is that the biggest cost is high-quality teachers. And if you are investing in teachers, you really can create a great education regardless of the physical environment mm-hmm. that is there.
Yes.
And so I started looking, well, that other sort of cost is the building. It's about the brick and mortar facility and all the costs that come with that. So, having someone come in and clean your classroom every evening, being able to have a receptionist who can greet folks when they enter the building, all the sort of additional roles that are required just to run that facility.
And heating, electricity, and maintenance, right? All that security.
All that security, taxes. Mm-hmm. Most preschools are small nonprofits or private businesses. So all of these buildings also have to be bought on the real estate market. So in a place like Seattle, which like many parts of this country, the real estate market is very hot, and so it's hard to afford the rent for new preschool, new spaces. So in addition to those high costs, you also have the inability to grow and expand.
Sure.
And so what that means is there's really long waiting lists. There's just not enough capacity for all of the families that really want to make sure that their kid does have, a great preschool experience.
And then who came up with the idea of saying, well, what if we scratch the building altogether?
So that was where I started looking at outdoor preschools. I was like, this is it. There's something here. And it was when I toured an outdoor preschool in the University of Washington called Fiddlehead. It operates in a local park in the Arboretum. And what I found there is they share their budget. And that's where I found that by not having that building, they were able to pay their teachers a little bit more than market rate. So they were able to get these really highly qualified, very capable educators, but still offer a tuition that was a little bit lower than market rate. And I looked at that model and I was like, this is something that if you scale, if you're able to offer that experience to many families, I could bring the price down to probably 30% less than your typical preschool. And all of a sudden that becomes a conversation of, that family that might make too much to qualify for subsidies, from the city or the state, but they make too little money to actually afford preschool on their own. All of a sudden that group of families has an affordable preschool option.
Yeah, we want to talk about the financial model in much greater detail, because I'm sure our mm-hmm. listeners are really curious about how you can make it work and what the costs really are. But you touched on, you looked at, in this case, Fiddlehead, another outdoor education classroom in Washington. Mm-hmm. The idea of scraping the building and moving kids outdoors is not new, really, right? What have you found? Where has it started and where has it been established already?
So outdoor preschools took off 50 to 60 years ago across Northern Europe. So specifically Denmark, Sweden, and Norway were really the origin of the forest school movement. And it really spread across Germany, Switzerland, and England, which is just in the United Kingdom, they have over 300 forest schools. Wow. And that's a lot of children. It's a significant portion of English families that are choosing to send their child to outdoor preschool in one of the rainiest, most gray, cloudy, countries on earth. And looking at that, I was like, oh, it's so successful in these other countries. It's able to meet these education outcomes where those children are performing at grade level or higher when they enter school. And it's in climates that are as wet and cold as the Pacific Northwest, and in some cases much colder. And that's where I was like, this is something that's feasible in Seattle and is very timely, very much meets a need that a lot of families are looking to address.
Great. We're going to take a quick break, but thank you again for making the time today. It's such an interesting topic. It's Andrew Jay, the CEO of Tiny Trees Preschool out of Seattle, Washington, a great new model, or not so new, really, since it has been successfully established all over Europe already, as we just heard, to make preschool education affordable, learning in outdoor classrooms. That's our topic here in this hour of An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg, and we'll be right back with so much more. And a thank you to our underwriters. This show is brought to you by Batiste Rum, the first eco-positive rum of the Caribbean. Ask for Batiste Rum at Trader Joe's and Whole Foods and other fine retailers. More information, batisterum.com. That's BATISTERHUM.com. And thank you also to Earl's Organic Produce, a national distributor of organic fruits and vegetables that has been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. From grocery store to company cafeteria to caterers and personal chefs, anyone can buy from Earl's Organic. Certified organic produce at earlsorganic.com. And we're back here to An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg. Our topic in this hour is a new preschool concept that uses the outdoors to create an exceptional and affordable education framework. We're speaking with the CEO of Tiny Trees Preschool out of Seattle, Washington. That's Andrew Jay, who's joining us in this hour of An Organic Conversation. Andrew, you talked about the model has been spread through our Europe, Northern Europe, weather in England was not a problem. They somehow managed it. Just to get into that, if people listen and say, well, sure, in California or in Washington, maybe on the West Coast, but we here in Nebraska, there's just no way. And maybe there is no way to do it in really cold climates. But how are you tackling this really true outdoor experience, having the kids being outdoors all day or half the day? How do you equip them?
So the Scandinavian proverb is that there's no bad weather, just bad clothing. And so for us, we make sure that our children, have the equipment to be warm and dry, regardless of the weather. And so weather requires a lot of coaching of parents on how to, make sure that the children has long underwear and fleece and wool and synthetic materials to, stay warm when they're wet. And then we also give every child a one-piece rain suit and a pair of insulated rubber boots. And part of that is to make sure that every child has the equipment that they need to be successful. And then part of that is also to make sure that every child very much has a uniform. You can't actually look at a classroom and say, oh, these are the children on scholarship and these are the children that that are a little more affluent. And so it combines that utility and equity. And we found it's been very successful. We definitely have had a few days where parents will show up and be a little skeptical because epic rains. But with a combination of good rain gear, having a designated rain shelter for every location that you can go to, so maybe a picnic shelter, it might be a tarp set up. And then also, outdoor preschool is about keeping children moving and warm. So you don't have as much sitting in a chair time as you might in an indoor space. That means that children are able to generate a lot of the heat that you need to keep moving.
Yeah, I mean, they're not sitting for 4 hours on their butts looking at a chalkboard to what the teacher tells them, but they're romping around, right? They're discovering things. They're running nonstop, I would assume, somehow climbing a tree, on a tree, maybe whatever is the educational lesson that day, but they're constantly active. So that certainly keeps them warm. It is an interesting time to open your school, though. You said September 12th, with Seattle in the winter months being a very wet place, you're really trying to prove that it works, it sounds like.
Yes, and this year is a La Nina year, so it has been wetter and colder than normal. And October was actually the wettest month on record, and we received pretty epic rains every day. And so it was very much a good testing year for us when it comes to the weather. And what we've learned is that kids are really excited about the weather. Like, you ask a child what is their favorite part of the classroom, and they talk about how much they love the mud puddles and the mudslide that they've created, or how cool it is that the sandbox has turned into a giant mud factory where they can create any sculptures or crap castles or anything that they're excited about.
Sure.
And I think that's an important thing to remember, is that for children, they really only care about their comfort in the moment. They're not thinking, they don't have the anxiety like adults about the comfort in the future. And so, a parent will check their iPhone in the morning and see that it's going to rain, over an inch that day, and get really concerned and have to work with our teachers to make sure that their child is prepared. But from the kid perspective, that's just a really awesome day where there is so much water to play with. And so for us, we've just made sure that those systems are there, and then we just find ways to make those play opportunities available, and the kids have been pretty excited about it.
So, with a few months into it now, what have you learned? What is working well, and where you needed to make some adjustments? What can still be improved, both for your particular school and in the overall system? If you already have a perspective there.
Mm-hmm.
Of what you've learned before we go into the finance details that we want to talk about. But what has worked well and what has needed some attention?
There were a number of things that we knew were going to work well in an outdoor preschool. We've been really impressed. We just knew going in that kids were going to get a lot more exercise than your typical preschool. We knew that we were going to be able to meet the same academic outcomes in terms of having a literacy-rich classroom, being able to make sure there's numbers and symbol play, and that children are getting all of those sort of curriculum pieces so they're ready when they enter kindergarten. And all of that has been really easy. I'd say the big surprises on the positive side have been how relatively quiet our classrooms are. If you go into your typical preschool, it's really loud, and there's a lot of shrieking children, and there's a lot of energy going on. And what we found is that in an outdoor classroom, it's a lot quieter and children are less anxious. And that lower anxiety is really manifested in interesting ways. Like we have far fewer children on the first day of school crying than your typical preschool. And most of those children adjusted to the first day. Because in your typical preschool experience, the first time that a child is leaving their parent, and they can be really sad and have all this anxiety, and if there's other children around them in a closed space that are sharing that anxiety, they can build on each other. And so for us, seeing that lower anxiety has made a pretty big
Yeah, interesting. Awesome now that you're saying that, to say goodbye to your parents for the first day in school and then sit mm-hmm. in a form that they've never sat in before, which is focused mm-hmm. for several hours on a chair with little breaks perhaps, but still all mm-hmm. of a sudden they're required from one day to the next to be able to sit still, take in a completely new environment with very little physical involvement. It's all of a sudden mm-hmm. it's all about brain. That seems actually wrong. It doesn't, all of a sudden, it makes the Tiny Trees preschool concept or outdoor education not just a financial model that is so much smarter, but you're actually easing a greater focus on learning into a child's life that was, you know, all it knew up until that point was to run around. And now it gets to understand what is the environment that I'm actually interacting with and running around in. But you're not confining them to a chair and a chalkboard. That's what you're saying, right?
Yes. Yeah. So we believe that a joyful childhood is essential to a great education. Mm-hmm. And you were seeing preschools across the country starting to embrace play as a cornerstone of education. Mm-hmm. And then the need to bring more of that joy into childhood. And that's been so easy in an outdoor environment, because for
sure.
a child,
the
outdoors is this joyful place. It's full of wonder. It's full of all, you know, all of these cool things to explore. There's so many new ways that you can interact with the environment. And that has led to, has supported a lot of the academic outcomes that you may be looking for in an indoor preschool. But it has also led to these really great emotional and social outcomes, you know, to children that are, you know, better able to empathize with, you know, another child, to learn how to share, to develop patience and impulse control, being able to, you know, wait until another child is done with a toy, or being able to learn
negotiate.
How to
collaborate. Sure, exactly.
Negotiate. And all those human skills that are essential. And it's not just essential for school, but if you are looking for what are the skills that are going to differentiate humans from robots in 30 years, and that are going to ensure that the job that you are looking for is still there when you graduate, you know, college. It all comes down to human skills mm-hmm. and the ability to work with others. And that's where we feel like we're not just preparing kids for kindergarten, but we're making sure that they have that boost, you know, for the rest of their lives.
And it's really beautiful. There's a surprise factor in nature. Of course, you have a curriculum, and we want to talk about that next. But mm-hmm. the surprise, you don't know if you, even as a teacher, if there will be a salamander or if there will be mm-hmm. whatever. You might find a snake. And in a classroom, you don't have that. It's really just based on the curriculum. So even the stress on the teacher is much greater if you know I'm walking in and I'm walking out in 45 minutes, and mm-hmm. this is what they need to get in those 45 minutes, end of story. How is that for teachers to interact with nature and be spontaneous and learn how to deal with the moment?
It's really great for both those opportunity lessons. You know, if you are walking down a trail and an owl lands on a branch, you can take a moment and talk about the owl and talk about birds and talk about all the systems that that are in nature that relate to that owl. It's a great teaching opportunity. But it also works for, you know, planned teaching lessons. So if you as a teacher want to read a book, you know, about animals in the classroom, you know, like a classic early childhood book is The Very Hungry Caterpillar. And you know, if you read The Very Hungry Caterpillar and then as a class you go out and you search for caterpillars and insects and other bugs and try to find leaves that look like they've been eaten by caterpillars, all of which are activities that really help children develop fine motor control, to get really close, you know, and develop their observation skills. And all of a sudden, that planned lesson that would have been more abstract in a classroom becomes very relevant in an outdoor space.
Sure, yeah. You mentioned the success of the educational part, that they do better. How do you measure that, and what is the curriculum? Who developed the curriculum? Did you adopt that from a European model, or are there at this point, if people listen to this in other communities and are interested in starting their own preschool education format outdoors, are there concepts or educational packages that you can adopt?
Yes. So our model is actually a little bit easier as a package than some, you know, other outdoor preschools. The goal of Tiny Trees is to bring the four school movement mainstream. Like, we really want to show and demonstrate that an outdoor preschool can reach the same social, emotional, and academic outcomes as an indoor preschool, that your child is just as prepared when they enter kindergarten. But they also get this really joyful childhood, you know, this childhood immersed in the natural world. And so what we use specifically is the HiSCOPE curriculum, and it was developed in Michigan. It's very evidence-based curriculum. It was created based on one of the longest preschool studies that they've done called the Perry Preschool Project. Mm-hmm. And that was in the 1960s where they actually followed a number of children from age 3 all the way up to well into their 50s now. And that's where they found the children that go to preschool, you know, are more likely to learn to read, more likely to succeed at math, to graduate high school, you know, to now their 50s, more likely to be married, to have less of alcohol or substance abuse challenges, less likely to spend time in the juvenile justice system or incarcerated as an adult. And all of that data came from this study. And so that high school curriculum is very much seen as sort of the gold star of high-quality, traditional preschool curriculum. Mm-hmm. And so for Tiny Trees, being able to take that curriculum, adapt it to an outdoor delivery, we're able to demonstrate that this is quality. We are just as high quality as your traditional preschool. We just happen to be delivering it in this outdoor classroom, outdoor context.
How do you measure that? Are you measuring the education success? I know you just started, but are you keeping track of kids' development?
Yes. Yep. So we, again, use another system that's very mainstream. It's called Teaching Strategies Goal. It follows children throughout their preschool career, and you're tracking them according to developmental milestones. So each day, our teachers are making observations on our children and saying, oh, this child is demonstrating this level of fine motor skills, like ability to, you know, hold marbles or a pen or a pencil. And it's on this level of gross motor skills, you know, the ability to climb trees and, you know, balance on logs. And then it's also developing, is showing these specific emotional and social indicators. Mm-hmm. You know, here's this demonstration of them, you know, showing empathy, or here's observation of them still working on developing impulse control. And that is something that we need to prioritize as teachers.
Great.
And so those observations, which are small and quick on a daily basis, add up over time to a longer trend for each child. So that when you have a parent-teacher conference, you're able to say, oh, you know, your child is really excelling in these ways. We think that they could use some help in this specific area of development. Here's a few things you might want to think of doing at home with your child. And here's a few things that we've been doing in the classroom with your child to help them sort of meet those goals.
Beautiful.
And then what we end with at the end of the school year, we then use that data to do a final assessment of each child that is entering kindergarten. So next year, we'll be able to look at our cohort of graduating five-year-olds and say they're specifically performing at this level in reading, math, social, and emotional skills. And then since we are using the same assessment system that all kindergartens, teachers in Washington State use, we then are able to compare our data to the same data for the school district when those children enter kindergarten because they go through the same assessment. And what that means is we're actually able to say, oh, so our children are performing this percentage above grade level compared to their school district, or they're performing a little bit lower in this area compared to the school district. And so that's the data that we're really excited to have, because we're able to make a pretty clear case.
Sure.
This is the clear benefit of outdoor preschool. In addition, there's all these intangible, awesome benefits of, you know, just being able to be a kid outdoors for 2 or 3 years of your life.
Affordable preschool education, learning in outdoor classrooms. That's our topic in this hour of An Organic Conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg, and I'm speaking with Andrew Jay, the CEO of the Tiny Trees Preschool, who's joining me today from Seattle, Washington, really on behalf of the preschool outdoor education classroom model. Andrew, we're almost out of time, but I do want to talk about the financial contributions. You have made it possible to even get a stipend for people, and you touched on that earlier just a little bit, that don't make enough to get a kid into preschool education but make too much to get subsidized as well. How many kids do you have, and what is the exact financial model that it cost with you?
So we have 160 children that are enrolled at Tiny Trees, and a little over 50, so 56% of those children receive either financial assistance from Tiny Trees or free tuition through the Seattle Preschool Program. And so we are very much committed to equity and affordability. And so when we created our model, we created two prices. And so there's one, which is our regular price, and that actually is a little bit more than the cost of operating preschool. It generates a little bit of a surplus. And then there's a second price that reflects all the cost savings involved in our model and uses a little bit of that surplus from folks who are paying regular price. And so what that turns into is folks who are receiving financial assistance are getting a little less than half off tuition from Tiny Trees. That means if you were doing a 5-day-a-week program and the regular price is $700, you'd be paying $500 or $450.
And that's per month, you're saying? $700 a month?
Yep, per month. So it would come out for a 10-month year. The regular price would be about $7,000. The financial assistance price would be a little under $5,000.
Which, again, you said in the beginning is what, about half or almost less than half or a little bit more than half of what regular preschool education?
So when the Seattle Preschool Program did their assessment of preschool in Seattle, they found that it cost $10,000, so $1,000 a month to offer basic preschool. And so for our financial assistance families, they're paying half of the market rate in Seattle. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, by qualifying as a provider, so doing all of the work that we've been doing with our curriculum and our teacher training and our quality, we're able to become a provider for universal preschool in Seattle, which is called the Seattle Preschool Program. And what that means is families that make $72,000 for a family of four or less, which is a substantial portion of our city, they qualify for free tuition at Tiny Trees, paid for by the city of Seattle. And that's a big deal for us because, at our classrooms, at our Seattle Preschool Program classrooms, half of the children are receiving free tuition. About an additional quarter of the children are receiving financial assistance from Tiny Trees. They're paying that sort of middle rate. And then another quarter is paying full price. And what you get is this really beautiful, integrated classroom mm-hmm. where you have children learning how to communicate across difference. You have families that are building relationships with other families in their neighborhood that they may not all interact with on a daily basis. You get a much more culturally rich classroom. And that's where, Tiny Trees is ultimately looking to replicate. It's like we want to create these mixed income classrooms and offer that experience, across Western Washington so that families have an easy, affordable outdoor preschool option in their neighborhood. If outdoor preschool makes them, if that's what they're excited about.
Sure. And that is the last question I have for you. Can you see this not just limited to Washington or Seattle, but can you see this as a model that could work anywhere in the U.S.? Or are there limitations, weather maybe being one, if it's a really harsh winter? Or are you saying, mm-hmm. no, it's really about equipment. And if you have a little bit of a shelter for a few hours, even in winter, it's generally a model that could work anywhere. Is that your message?
Yes, in most places. And I would say that there are some parts of the upper Midwest where the outdoor preschools do have some sort of building associated that they do use for the snowiest and coldest days. I would say that it can work anywhere, but once you do get below, well below zero, it does become hard no matter how good the clothing is. So,
and weather is really the only obstacle, right? I mean, if it gets so harsh that you can't be outdoors, you can use a public library maybe. I mean, there can be arrangements made where for a few weeks of the year, a few days or a few weeks, you do have an alternative and it's already built in knowing that this will be extremely cold. But other than weather, this is not limited community-wise by anything else, I hear.
No. So it is definitely a growing movement across the United States. One great organization that is helping support four schools is called the Natural Start Alliance. And they actually have a map and track outdoor preschools as they're opening. So if families are looking for an outdoor preschool in their neighborhood, the Natural Start Alliance can give great recommendations of folks that are already doing that work and also support teachers that are looking to bring more of an outdoor experience into their classroom. Because the great thing with outdoor preschool is that it doesn't have to be a new organization. It could be a great preschool that decides that they want to have 2 days a week entirely outdoors sure. at their neighborhood park.
And otherwise, would it be okay to learn more from Tiny Trees?
Yes. Yep. So you can learn more about Tiny Trees at tinytrees.org. And we've got lots of stories and a lot more information on our blog about how to build a great school.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for having the idea, for making it possible, actually, for creating it. 160 kids. That's amazing. That's how many individual classes?
So that is 6 outdoor classrooms.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Yes, much success to you. Sounds like an amazing model, and I can't wait to have you back in a year or so to just learn from the experience and refine it even further. But it sounds like it's addressing so many aspects, not just for the kids, not just for the teachers, but for the community at large. And that those are the projects that deserve the label of true sustainability. Thank you so much. That's Andrew Jay, the CEO of Tiny Trees Preschool out of Seattle, Washington. Again, tinytrees.org. Thanks, Andrew, for your work and for making time today.
Thank you. I really appreciate it.
Yes, great work. I'll be back soon. Take care.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Bye.
And that is our focus, or was our focus in this hour, affordable preschool education, learning in outdoor classrooms, making preschool education fun, safe, and absolutely affordable. Wonderful work. tinytrees.org. We are switching topics, but staying with the overall theme of sustainability. Here's our consumer update from the world of produce. What's going on the produce dock, how to shop for it, how to buy it, how to store it, and what to do with it. Organic fruits and vegetables, of course, with Earl Herrick. Here is What's in Season. And as we have him every week, hopefully, with us is the voice of the San Francisco produce dock, Mr. Organic, Mr. Earl Herrick, the founder and owner of Earl's Organic Produce. Earl, are you there?
Hello, Helga. Good morning to you.
Good morning. It's a beautiful January. How are things on the dock?
Something a little different right now because myself and our company and many individuals around the world, actually, you're focusing on what's going to be happening January 25th to the 28th down at Pacific Grove, which is just south of Monterey, California. There's the annual EcoFarm Conference.
For almost 40 years, it's a think tank, as you said, close to Monterey County, California, where educators and farmers and policymakers and chefs and eaters gather, anyone who's interested in food or the food system, to stir and be stirred, I would say. What sticks out for you for this year? What are you excited about?
One of them is that, you know, when I talk to people about it, I say it's at the very least a gathering of the tribes.
Yes.
But it's an incredibly reinvigorating, and for people new to the industry, you really get to witness and experience what this industry is about at its core. And it can be an incredibly regenerating process.
So, yeah, those are the six big themes. They say get inspired, recharge, because the location is phenomenal, right at the beach at Asilomar, south of Monterey, quite gorgeous. And you can see whales. Every January we see whales there.
Yes, right.
There's community and dance. There's learn, of course, lots of workshops. There's advocacy. There's engaging with elders and community. And there's honor, right? We are honoring our heroes.
No doubt. I just wanted to run down a real short list. Like you said, there are maybe 100 or I don't know, 50 to 100 different workshops. I just wanted to run down a couple. One workshop highlights for me are, you know, they're workshops for seasoned farmers and ranchers, for beginning farmers and ranchers. There are a number of workshops that are held specifically for Spanish as primary language growers and farmers.
That's great.
They're for merchants, handlers, distributors, for agricultural activists, for educators and researchers. There's some great stuff on social justice, advocacy, and cultural diversity. Anyway, I just wanted to mention those. For me, some of the ones that stood out I'm actually going through the pamphlet right now, and I'm actually going to read some of the things from here because
sure, go ahead.
This, some of the stuff I'm looking forward to. One is this one's called an annual research roundup, and it's a it's recent scientific supporting organic.
Oh, you know, nice.
That's really powerful because, you know, sometimes you get challenged in this industry. You know, like, why is it organic? What does it mean? Why is that important? And after you talk about, you know, what you intuit and how your heart feels, for many people, they need real evidence. And to be able to talk about that is absolutely important. I'm going to read a little bit about this. This workshop will help bridge the gap between science and the public by covering research on applied solutions for farmers, the environmental effects of organic systems, and the human health impacts of exposure to pesticides.
Wonderful. Yeah, we had Maria Rodale on the show just a few months back, of course, of Rodale Institute, talking about the latest research and how compelling that is. Finally, now we have long-term studies of both GMOs as well as organic over 10 or 20 years, and we can finally see that organic outperforms any other system because it is based on healthy soil. Even if there are short-term gains, maybe with other technologies or even GMOs, they all falter after a few years because they just don't hold up the same performance curve when you bet on technology. So incredible.
I'm looking forward to,
yeah, me too,
to that workshop. Another one that's grabbed my attention is called Getting Your Farm Business on the Right Legal and Financial Footing. You know, in dealing with a lot of small growers,
yeah,
some that are emerging, this is an aspect that, I mean, a grower not only has to be an artist with the work that they do with the soil, but they got to be grounded as business people.
Yeah, nice
and
pun. Yes.
I've talked to many people that, in talking about, you know, planning, production, and all that, when you start talking about other aspects, they're not, you know, they're a huge gap.
Right, and taking a loan out maybe without much equity, it's just, it's a business you want to run. It doesn't matter how green you are. If you can't be economically viable, you won't stay in business.
Yes.
So,
yes.
Yeah, wonderful that that's really now in people's awareness and they're offering courses and workshops on that. It's great.
Yeah. Part of that is, you know, everybody would love to own property, but out here in California, you're leasing it, and understand the financing and the application, mm-hmm, of that.
And that might actually be even smarter. You know, in some business models, leasing land of a long-term 20-year lease, if you can get that, yes, might make more financial sense than going, yep, into debt.
The other topic, which is, you know, pretty relevant and a hot topic right now, there's an organic cannabis certification workshop going on. I mean,
of course,
there's very real. You know, I'd be interested to see what they have to say about that. The other one is this one. Another one's called Pathways to Ownership, and you know that is so important because the challenges are so immense, and to find out that there are some avenues that you can pursue that will assist you in getting there. There's a workshop.
Mm-hmm.
That will help you in,
amazing,
negotiating and composing a lease and also pathways to ownership. I mean, that kind of stuff is,
yeah,
invaluable.
So and important.
Here's the workshop you can go to, and then afterwards, you can there's a Q&A that happens at the workshop, of course, but you have like-minded people that you can...
Yeah, exactly. That's the value, to discuss what you hear with, you know, 1,600, 1,800 people who will be there for 4 days. Again,
yeah,
from farmers to chefs to eaters to policymakers to politicians, it's all, they're all there, educators, etc., and to like-minded folks in exactly in your shoes that you will find to run those ideas, discuss the experience. Cool, and that's again Eco Farm in Asilomar, yeah, Monterey. That's at the Pacific Grove Conference Center, January 25th to the 28th.
Yep.
eco-farm.org, eco-farm.org. Check it out. Even if you just have some chickens in the backyard, this conference is for everyone, the professional and the amateur food lover. That's the defining principle. It doesn't matter where you fall in the spectrum.
Yes.
Thank you, Earl. I will see you down there, in fact.
Great. I'm looking forward to it.
Me too, so much.
I'll see you on the steps.
And then we'll have you back next week.
Yes, sir.
Thanks so much, Earl. Take care.
Absolutely.
Bye.
Bye.
And that wraps up a beautiful hour of an organic conversation. What's in season and affordable preschool education, learning in outdoor classrooms, scraping the building and saving the budget by doing so and providing a much more interactive and fun learning environment and curriculum for preschoolers, including their parents and teachers and the community at large, as we learned today. This is an organic conversation. I'm Helge Hellberg, and I look forward to being back with another episode next week. Thanks so much for listening. An Organic Conversation is a proud production of the Organic Media Network. Associate Producer, Kristen Ponger. The show is made possible through the fantastic support of our underwriters, Bowman College, a leader in the field of holistic nutrition and culinary arts. Become a nutrition consultant or a natural chef at one of their campuses or learn from home in a self-paced mentored distance learning program. For more information on a degree in holistic nutrition or the culinary arts, BowmanCollege.org. Thank you also to Earls Organic Produce, a national distributor of organic fruits and vegetables that has been sourcing solely organic produce for over 20 years. From grocery store to company cafeteria to caterers and personal chefs, anyone can buy from Earls Organic. Certified organic produce at EarlsOrganic.com. And Fry Vineyards, America's first organic winery, family-owned and operated. Dedicated to the highest levels of organic and biodynamic farming, Fry never adds synthetic sulfites or other preservatives to their wines. Award-winning wines at frywine.com. That's FREYWINE.com. And Batiste Rum, the first eco-positive rum of the Caribbean. Ask for Batiste Rum at Trader Joe's and Whole Foods and other fine retailers. More information at batisterum.com. That's BATISTERHUM.com. For more episodes and our podcasts, go to anorganicconversation.com. And of course, you can follow us on facebook.com/anorganicconversation. Our Twitter handle is talkorganic, and we're also on Instagram. I am Helge Hellberg, host and executive producer of An Organic Conversation. And we'll be back with another episode next week. Thank you so much for listening.